Welcome to the Empowered to Connect podcast, where we come together to discuss a healing-centered approach to engagement and well-being for ourselves, our families, and our communities. I'm JD Wilson. I'm your host. And today on the show, we got Jesse Ferris and Becca McKay. That's their right names. And we're going to talk with them today about something that is vital to our organization, to Empower to Connect, vital to how we operate internally. And it is a part of lots of the different trainings that we do and give out around the state and globally as well. And so we're going to talk about how we talk about different things that can be in some way, shape, or form dicey, for lack of a better term. And so Jesse and Becca are going to just share with us their thoughts on that. We'll share our own stories of when we noticed that language becoming either offensive or didn't sit right or rubbed us the wrong way and helped us to evolve and develop the way that we talk about things like adoption or things like foster care, stuff like that. So all those things are coming up. We're super excited to have them with us today. Always a treat to have both Jesse and Becca. So now without any further ado, here they are, Jesse, Becca, and myself talking about how we talk about stuff. Okay, so Jesse and Becca are with us, and guys, we're going to talk today about how we talk about things, and that is a very broad, generic title, obviously, but if we can, why don't we jump right into it? And Becca, do you mind just kind of framing this conversation and kind of why it's important? Then we'll jump into some of the reasoning behind why.
Absolutely. Really, what we want to highlight today is just how important language is. How we talk about people, how we talk about situations, how we talk about differences, all these things are just super important. And I think that is one of those things that we do things so automatically. And y'all know, like, our brain wants things to be super quick and efficient. So your brain is just hardwired to put people in quick categories and to summarize and to lump things together. And so really being thoughtful about how you're talking about things takes time. Like, it takes that reflective pause to be able to kind of focus in and think about not only what am I trying to communicate, but how's that being received by the other person? And I think we could all probably think of times when how someone talked about us or to us really impacted us in some ways. I'll break the ice and share the first one that comes to my mind. I grew up, my parents were missionaries overseas, and we would come back to the States very rarely, like once every 4 years. And when we came back, we would do this circuit where we'd visit churches that were supporting us. And in those churches, they're talking to you as if you are the person of Jesus Christ, just to be honest. Like, y'all are incredible. This is amazing. You're so young and you live in the former Soviet Union. Like, it's just this big, big thing. And so I think, if I can think back now with my adult brain, there was a lot of pressure to be perfect. So again, what the people intended was to show gratitude and appreciation and encouragement. That was a great intention. How I felt that as a little kid was a lot of pressure to be perfect and to show up in a certain kind of way. So that's like just one example of someone's intentions and how they're talking to you or about you then can kind of like impact you in some different ways. Jesse, what pops to your mind with that?
Well, I love how you talk about intention, because I think that's just a gracious way to remind all of us that, I mean, people are doing the best that they can, right? Like, they're not, most of the time, people are not trying to hurt your feelings. I've got a really general one that we do all the time, but I'll tell you why it hits me wrong. And I think that's very individual to me. I really don't like when people ask me, as a woman, do you work? Yeah, guys, we all work. We all do things that we either get paid to do or we don't get paid to do, but everybody works. And especially as a woman, as a mom in my house, I want my girls to know it doesn't matter whether I get paid to do it or not, I do work. Yeah. Yeah. So when I ask that question to other people, I might say, What do you do during the day, or what takes up your time during the day? Or I'm asking them how they spend their time, because I know when people ask me, do you work, to Becca's point, their intention is just to find out, what do I do during the day, right? Like,
right.
What?
All right.
But I don't want what I do to be my identity. And I think we'll talk about that in a minute. A lot of times we are just, as Becca said, to our detriment, but also just the way our brains work, we're categorizing people and identifying them either by what they do, or by where they came from, or what's happened to them. And so, I will intentionally turn that question around when they say, do you work? And I'll say, oh yeah, I do. Are you asking about, like, if I do paid work? Yeah, I do. I do some paid work and I do some volunteer work. And then I tell them about that. Or maybe I'll, you know, back when I was staying home with my kids all day long, I would say, yes, I do work as a stay-at-home mom all day long, you know, and you could be gracious in your answer. But inwardly, that one hits wrong. I'm wondering if y'all have anything else like that.
Yeah, I mean, I immediately thought of similar to what you shared, like the lionization of adoption, or the kind of like nobility instilling of adoption. And I know that when we first brought our oldest home, he is Black, we are not. So as we're like carrying him through the church building, it was like this, only thing I could equate it to is the movie Apollo 13, when the astronauts are like walking back down the gangway after they get out of the ship, and everyone's like standing and looking at all at them and clapping. Like, it was never anyone's intention to do anything other than just like kind of like show, like, oh, this is great, and we're with you, and we're so happy for this new life in your home. And but the way that the unintended consequences of that kind of like heaping of praise was, number one, it didn't build like an arrogance within us. What it built within me is like, when I was struggling as a parent, I'm like, well, I can't tell this crowd about it, because they feel like we hung the moon, and all of a sudden they helped us fundraise for this adoption, and then all of a sudden now, like, I'm gonna come and tell them that I'm incompetent, that I'm not worthy of receiving the money that they, you know, gave toward this adoption. Like, I can't share that with them. Like, this is like our mission. This is what we're supposed to be doing. Like, we're supposed to be prepared for this. And that was, again, never anyone's intention, I would imagine. And if it was, you know what, then I'd like to have a word with that person. But like, if it was not their intention, then it's just unintended consequences. But those things matter. Like, it mattered that we had a community we could go to when we were struggling. And it took us, I feel like, far too long to be able to have a safe place to open up, to say, we are lost and don't know what we're doing and need some help. And when we were finally able to do that, it was a game changer. But we weren't able to do that in our first community, because it was such a difficult dynamic to overcome, right?
I think you're really pointing out the power that language has, JD, like in the labels that we give people, unintended, in the way that we talk about situations, unintended, and who we talk about them with and who we talk about them in front of. All of it has so much power. And I very much think about it in the unintended consequences, right? But I also think about, I mean, obviously, we all trip up and say things not what we mean to say. It was just in a meeting last week where the words that were coming out of my, it was a late meeting in the day, and the words that were coming out of my mouth, I was like, my brain was saying to myself, like, this is not what you mean. But I just didn't have the presence of mind or the stress capacity at the moment. Or sometimes I think maybe what we're doing in this podcast is saying, sometimes we just don't have the language to say it a different way.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you think, oh, I've never thought about like how I ask people about that, about what they do during the day, or how I ask people about their adoption experience, or how I fundraise for an adoption and the language that I use for that. Like, all of that is so important to remember being in tears after going to a pediatrician visit with right after our first adoption. And so with our oldest child, and I was checking in, and because it was my first child, the person at the desk was adding information about me and our family. And she said, "Do you have any kids of your own?" And she asked in front of my toddler. And I remember feeling very aware. My new daughter just heard her ask this, and I want my daughter to know that she is my child.
Yeah.
And so I said back to her, friendly, "This is my own daughter." And she said, "Well, you know what I mean." And I said, I can't remember how I got out of it, but I remember crying about it later that day, just because I had been put in a difficult position with the language that she used. And she did not, as she indicated to me, she didn't know that it was offending me or putting me in a tricky position. She just wanted to know, do I have biological children to add to the file?
Right.
I wanted her to know, adopted children are our own children. They have just as much a seat at the table in our families as anyone else, you know, and there's so much subtext and context to language that lies underneath that.
Right.
What's interesting is, I remember mentioning it in a social media post, and someone connected to that, practice, that pediatric practice, reached out to me and was like, "We would never want you to feel like that." Like, from the organization level, that was not what they valued or the way they wanted to show up. But language is so, like, we carry our life experiences and the way we've been taught to talk about things into whatever we're saying in any given moment. So I guess just to say, man, we can heap grace upon that. And I love what Becca said, that she said something about her adult brain thinking about it later. And I think it highlights that we do evolve in our language. We do change, and we do kind of learn as we learn more in life. And this still happens as adults, because we're still learning as adults. We learn different ways to talk about things and say things better. And often it's from our own experiences that we're taught that. But I think we can learn from each other too.
If you're listening and you're starting to feel resistance just bubbling up, if you're starting to feel this sense of like, "We just can't talk about anything. Why do you have to be so sensitive?" Right. If that is bubbling up inside of you, I just want to name that. I think that that is a normal feeling. I think that a lot of people feel tired by the thought of, man, I just can't say anything right. And so I'm just going to shut down. Well, then I guess I just won't ask anyone how they're doing ever, because I could say it wrong. So if you're starting to have, if you're starting to have those kinds of feelings as you listen, one, I think the three of us have all been there. Two, we don't want this conversation to make you feel shut down, or I don't even know, or I'm probably doing everything wrong, or we don't want that kind of like panic or resistance, but we do want to push in a little bit to that uncomfortable feeling, that uncomfortable place. And we've decided, I think, as an organization and individually, that we just want to be gracious and compassionate and caring to the people that we come in contact with. And we are 100% going to say stuff, quote unquote, wrong. I'm doing air quotes.
Oh, gosh.
Sometimes.
We still do it. Yes.
It's not about like scaring yourself out of even opening your mouth, but it is about being willing to take feedback from the people around you, being willing to make adjustments when needed, and just being willing to like step into the conversation, not with a, "Well, you're just being too sensitive," and instead with a, "Well, I wonder why that really matters." And you mentioned it, Jesse, because a lot of these things come back to our identity. So instead of being like, "Well, she knew what I meant by own kid. Why did she even, that was just her being sensitive." Instead, "Oh, that is feedback for me. And that could inform how I talk to other parents in the future." Not that, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be like a catastrophic event. It's just a little tweaking.
It's part of connecting with people, right? This is the heart of connection. It's showing, I value what you think. I value your voice. I value the way that you see yourself. that's part of the way that we connect with people. And I think that's why it's so woven into the fabric of who we are at Empowered to Connect.
So you might, like Beck mentioned, be listening to this. And the next natural question is like, okay, well, how am I ever going to learn if I'm just saying things offensively and I have no idea? So here's what I would say. And I'll tell it myself. I'll share this story. But when you said we're still going to every now and then, like it's, I would say I'm in the often category where I'm just talking and not thinking about something I'm saying and unintentionally say something offensive to somebody. Now, because I have friends who love me and will tell me the truth over time, that has, and a wife who does that for me very well, like over time that has like informed how I seek out feedback, how I get feedback, all that. So this is yours. One of my best friends from years and years and years ago, recently going through the hardest time of his life. And, we were supposed to get together, with several of us and it wasn't going to work out for him for one reason or another, or something. I was like, well, hey, why don't we get to the later, we could do it different time. He's like, it's not going to work later. Man, I'm just really disappointed. And I just said, oh man, listen, I totally get it. It's no big deal. Like we can do it again some other time. And because the circumstances that this friend was going through, like there was no guarantee there was going to be another time or that in the foreseeable future we had in the window for us to get together again. And so privately, like he messaged and just said, hey, I just want you to know, like, because I love you, you don't get it. Like you've never been through what I'm going through right now. And like, this is not something that, that I take lightly or something that you can understand what I'm going through. So please don't say I get it like that. Cause you don't. And I'm only sharing this with you just so that you understand how that comes across. But like, I've been looking forward to this for weeks and now this stupid weather thing happens and we can't get together. And now I don't know when the next time is that we're going to get to be together. And I'm just so sad about it. I needed a break. And so I just want you to know, like you could say in the future, like, and I'm so sorry, or I'm so sad with you. But please don't say like, I understand and try to draw an analogy to something different. And I mean, listen, does that feel great when it happens? Of course not. It feels miserable. And then I immediately was just like, oh, I'm so sorry. I did not know how that came across. But before I lashed out with this giant apology, I was like, this is like all things I was going to share. He already shared. Hey, you don't have to have some big apology. You like, I just want you to know, here's how you can say this in the future. So he equipped me as a friend just to know, here's why that hurt. Here's something different you can say that would communicate your sadness with me without like triggering in that particular way. And here's why this is a big deal to us. And that was so helpful. And it made me think twice every time before I communicated with him to make sure that I wasn't saying something insensitive. And now if we have other friends that are in a similar situation, like I don't talk the same way as I would have before. And that's just, guys, that's just growth. Like that's just how we grow, is having people who love us enough to point out, hey, I don't think you meant this, but this actually came across this way. So the two things I wanted to point out in this are like, one, he could have easily just had that same internal reaction and not told me. And like this dude thinks he knows what I'm going through. Like he has no idea. And it probably would have driven a wedge between us that I had no idea was there, right? Or he could have lashed out and been like, how dare you say you know what I'm going, you have no idea. Like instead, just in love and with a calm demeanor, like shared with me, hey, this is why this hurt. Here's something you can say differently next time. And I think when I heard that, I could just swallow my pride and say, I'm so sorry. I did not know that was going to come out that way. Thank you for sharing with me like how I can say this differently. And so, yes, I am so sad with you about this. That like has bolstered our friendship in a way that we both can share brutally honest things with each other without much of a filter, because we know that the other one will share if it some way rubs us the wrong way. So long story to say, those are two of the ways that we can interact where it's going to help propel knowledge and empower each other to communicate the proper way.
JD, I love that story because that is secure attachment. And I know that we're not talking about attachment styles in this particular episode, but if you listen with us, you know this is something that we, that's just part of what we take with us in every conversation. And it is the ability to be present to somebody else's experience without defensiveness, without getting entangled in it, without dismissing it. It's just being present. I'm even thinking about a way that I learned to change something I said this year. It was a friend of ours shared that when you say, I'm sorry, in response to a death in the family or something really serious going on, that sometimes it can come across as dismissive. Like, did that, said the thing I'm supposed to say.
Right.
And I asked, what do you think is a better response to that? And she said, I think it is, what happened to you matters to me. What a like golden statement. And that's what you're saying your friend wanted you.
Yeah.
The heart, it's just secure attachment. What happens to you matters to me. It doesn't, it's not my story, but it matters to me what's going on inside of you. And I just love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so many layers to this conversation that we could just keep peeling back. And I think one thing that I want to highlight is like, we're all just learning, and it really is going to depend on the people in your life to give you that feedback. So if you're not in friendships where y'all can be honest about how things are coming across, I would say cultivate that kind of friendship with people, cultivate relationships where you can take that feedback and you can really, take it to heart. I also think sometimes this can feel like a right versus wrong kind of conversation. And so to use a silly example, like we could fight to the death over whether it's caramel or caramel. We could fight to the death over whether it's pecan or pecan. If I go somewhere in the, I'm going to get it wrong, but let's pretend, well, let's say I'm going to the north and they're saying bag instead of bag. Okay. If I show up there here in the United States in the northern part of the country, and I just start going, it's not bag, you're wrong, it's bag, you're wrong. Like if I show up in someone else's context,
it's not soda, it's tell them,
it's not soda, it's Coke. Great, even better example. Then I'm missing the point. The point is that there's some things that are just contextual, that are cultural. There are some things that you adjust based on where you are, based on what you're talking about. And so I also just want to add that layer as we keep trucking through this conversation. I don't want it to feel like if you say blank, you're wrong. If you say blank, you're right. But it does matter what you say. And what I think what makes something, you know, you said secure attachment. I think what makes you a securely attached person is the ability to be with other people, even when there's differences, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think too, like even some of those preferences are individual to the unique person. I think potentially what I shared about not loving when people ask, do I work? That might just be a Jesse thing. I don't know. And I, you know, like it's not wrong to ask that question the way that Becca's saying. It's just being curious to know people, you know? I'm thinking about a story in a religious context about that I heard once about the way that we can label things without thinking about it. And it was this idea that there was, and this makes me think too, JD, about the way that we fundraise for adoptions and such. But the story that I heard that gave me pause was this group of Christians were raising money for a well in a developing country, and the people needed access to fresh water. This is a great thing to raise money for, right? And it was wonderful that they wanted to use what they had and their resources to help. The name of the fund was The Least of These. And the Least of These fund, and they gathered money over, I think, probably a holiday season. They gathered enough to fund the well. And when they went to this developing country and built the well, what they didn't realize is that the name of the fund would be inscribed onto the well. And so this well has inscribed on it, The Least of These.
Oh, and
the people receiving water from this well are coming to this well labeled the least of these. And it just gave me so much great pause of like a phrase that's commonly used and pulled from scripture that was never meant to be used to belittle someone's dignity or worth as a person.
Right.
And it makes me think about what are our similar phrases, like the least of these, that we're putting on people in groups, and we're asking them to sit under that phrase.
Yeah.
And it belittles them. It makes them feel demeaned and like that they are not worthy of what everyone is worthy of love and belonging and dignity and worth. Right. So I think this is one of the like unintended consequences, right? Like it wasn't intended for this to go sideways like that. Right. But I think a lot of things that we say or have carried certain types of language into, you know, our current present are brought from somewhere that we don't realize, and they're having unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. I think even about the phrase put up for adoption. Did you guys know that that comes from being put up on a slave auction block?
Yeah.
Like, we do not want to use that phrase. There are people in the adoption world that will use that phrase. A lot of people will be like, what am I supposed to say instead? And you can say phrases like placed for adoption, made an adoption plan. There will be birth parents that say put up for adoption. But I think that we just have to think about the consequences of our language. And like we've shared, we don't get it right always, but just being curious and humble to be like, whoa, I did not intend that. And to use our values of repair and, you know, making it better the next time, I think that we can follow that.
As an organization too, over the years, many people have heard Empowered to Connect use the phrase kids from hard places. And that was a thoughtful language choice to replace bad kids, horrible kids, wild kids, traumatized kids. And so that was some of the early founders trying to be thoughtful. And then as we've, you know, as an organization walked through different conversations with adult adoptees and people who have given us some more information, we've heard, hey, like, you're assuming that I'm a hard place, or you're putting a label on me that I don't want to carry. And so we've been trying to drop that phrase. You haven't heard it on the ETC podcast. You don't see it in any of our new materials. So it's not, this conversation again is not you do your best and then you stick to your guns. This conversation is you do your best, you listen for feedback, you adjust. You do your best, you listen for feedback, you adjust.
Yeah.
And that's going to continue.
We'll always be adjusting.
Yeah.
You can't listen to this podcast in this year and then listen to it in 20 years and it's not going to hold still. Like, we need to be changing. We need to be adjusting based on the way that people prefer to be talked about, right? Yeah. We just need to hear what they value. They don't want to be defined by what they do. They don't want to be defined by what happened to them.
None of us do, right? Like, I think that's the thing to keep in mind is that there are, we've talked in this podcast about differences in family origins, differences in ethnicity or race, differences in geographical birthplaces and then like culture within language and all those things. And, you know, pop versus Coke versus soda versus, you know, water and water and bags and bags and all that. So like, we talked about all those different things today. And in each of those situations, people who reside in the majority of those situations are going to dominate the cultural uses of different language. People from outside of those cultures don't know what they don't know. And so when there's a blending or merging of cultures, those coming from kind of the outside culture in need to be ready to learn and listen and be willing to understand what they don't know. And so that's a really broad way of just saying, when you're stepping into a culture that's not yours, have your mind open, be willing to listen and learn, ask questions. Hey, you know what? I don't know if this is the right phrase or not. Is this, and say that. 9.9 times out of 10, anyone who kind of leads with a question like that in a genuine humility, wanting to learn, is going to be received well and say, oh, gosh, no, we actually don't say that. Like that, that's wildly offensive to us. And you didn't know that, but here's the phrase we use instead, right? So I just think that, you know, if you've, for example, been on a mission trip before and you've done any kind of training beforehand, there's a lot of emphasis placed, or there should be, on cultural awareness, cultural competency, knowing that, like, when we sit down for a meal in this culture, like, food is very, very important. And so to turn away food is a slap in the face to the host that you are going with. So we're going to eat the food. You might not like it, and that's fine. This will be a great experience. Like, you're going to eat the food. You're going to say thank you. We're going to take our shoes off when we eat. When we enter a home, we're going, so like, you learn how to assimilate into that culture as a sign of respect. And so that is all this is like, this is not trying to be culturally or politically correct. This is not trying to get woke or something like that. Like, what we're trying to do is to show respect to all people we interact with, because all the people we interact with deserve dignity and respect from us, the best that we can give. So one silly example, and then we can kind of start to wrap up. My wife is an interior designer. And so, for years and years, she's doing her thing and learning and just, you know, like in the world, making stuff beautiful wherever she goes. And, I noticed that she started, I was looking at some plans that she was drawing, and I was like, what's a PB? I was like, I know what an MB is, but what's a PB or I was like, what's a P bath? And she's like, primary. And I was like, what the heck is that? And she's like, well, and she just looked at me like, how do you not know this? And then she goes, oh, I guess you wouldn't know this. And she was like, well, we just are trying to change language away from saying master bath or master bedroom and just saying primary instead. Because she was like, we were talking the other day and realized, like, oh, that really is derived from kind of plantation language of the master's quarters. Like, and we don't want to perpetuate that. So we're just going to change to saying primary instead. And sure enough, as I'm like looking at her different like interior design magazines or just publications, whatever, around the house, that shift has happened. I had no idea. And I still catch myself saying that, you know, all the time, like plumbers will come in like, where's the issue? Is it the master bathroom? I'm like, in the main bathroom, the primary bathroom. Like, so it's just something simple that we can do, as a shift that we can make to be conscious of respecting people around us. So, guys, final thoughts as we kind of wrap up this conversation that could go 10 more hours.
I have some, like, where do you start if you're like, okay, I'm hearing you, but this is a lot. And so if you're trying to figure out where to start, we do have a couple guidelines that we try to use here as we talk about things. And as we come into new places and new contexts, we try to apply these. So the first one is just, is this adjective or descriptor even necessary? A lot of times we add descriptions where we don't have to, like, yeah. If you're telling a story about your kids, do you have to say, my adopted black child did XYZ, or could it just be right, my son, my daughter, my kiddo? Like, do you have to have the adjective there? And if you're putting it there, are you putting it there in a way that honors the person you're talking about? Or are you trying to get something for yourself? Like, are you trying to get a little street cred? Are you trying to get a little recognition? I've been there for sure in ways that I've talked about other people. And so are we just being thoughtful about, is this adjective needed? Is it honoring the other person? Is my nonverbal and verbal communication humble, discerning, thoughtful? Am I taking that pause to just kind of put myself into a thoughtful posture? Lots of times, if you're not sure, using person first language can be helpful. A person who was adopted, a child who has a learning disability, a family who has been through medical trauma, putting the person first before the description is a lot of times helpful. And I'll put a caveat here. If you are kind of up with the trends of the day, people on the autism spectrum specifically have said, no, I want you to call me an autistic person because it's a part of my identity that I'm proud of. So again, even when you hear these guidelines, what we really want you to hear is listen to your people. Yeah. Be willing to adjust whenever you can. The categories that we really want to handle with care, if we're describing someone else's racial or ethnic descriptions, if we're giving physical descriptions of people, do you have to say it was the tall, fat man, or could you just say it was the man? Like, there are some things that we do that, you know, let's just be thoughtful about how we're talking about that. What about ability and disability? What about family makeup? That's something we've hit on a lot in this episode. And then what about trauma, grief, and loss? It's okay if you're hearing this and you're like, but I don't know what to replace it with yet. That's right. Okay. Just kind of dig in, listen to other people, get into the conversation. I guess just be willing to listen. That's my main, you know, as you talk, just be willing to listen. That would be kind of my closing thoughts. Jesse, what would you add?
Oh, I'm just thinking, I'm thinking about this way that Martin Luther King Jr. actually talked about kind of the trajectory of humanity's behavior. And he talked about the moral arc of the universe bending towards justice. And I kind of think about it, our language that way, like we're just bending toward right ways of relating with each other, right? And it's an arc. It's bending that way. And yeah. So I hope that we're constantly improving the way that we do that. Maybe we're not going to say orphans anymore, because that's something that happened to someone. That's not who someone is.
Right.
Maybe that changed to kids from hard places, but after getting some feedback from people who sat under that label, it didn't feel great to them. So then maybe we're going to say something like kids who've experienced adversity, yeah, or kids who've experienced trauma. And you know, what's interesting is now that we have been using that in our curriculum, you know what we end up using a lot? Kids. Because guess yeah. what? A lot of us need what we're saying kids from adversity need. Right. Every child deserves a safe adult. That's just every child, right? This past summer, I was even challenged with this idea of special needs are human needs. We talk about kids or people with special needs. Guess what? It's not wrong to need things. We all need things. And that's not meant in a dismissive way of the needs that people have medically or intellectually, whatever they're needing in their life. But let's stop othering people with our language and start being a little more inclusive. All kids deserve the kind of care that we at Empowered to Connect are trying to provide, right? So, yeah, it's like, let's just keep bending towards justice, keep bending towards redemption and the way that we operate in the world and operate, you know, and relate rightly towards people.
That's really good, guys. Thank you for this. One just last piece of encouragement. Some people in this conversation are not going to care how you use your words if they know that you love them, and they'll correct you when you need to be corrected. So don't feel the need to walk on eggshells. Just feel the need to like strive to show respect to everybody that you interact with. And that will help that language to bend as you go. So for Becca, for Jesse, I'm JD, and we'll see you next time. Okay, a huge thanks to Becca and to Jesse for joining us. And listen, this is a hard conversation. This is not a one episode and fixed conversation, but we wanted to start the conversation there to just to give you something to think about, to give some guidelines and some helpful rhetoric and feedback just to think about as you interact with different people all throughout your day. So hopefully that was helpful. If that was something that you, a conversation you ate up and you really enjoyed having that conversation, that is part of I would say kind of tip of the iceberg of some of what you go into in our facilitator training. And so right now, actually the window to become a Cultivate Connection facilitator is open. And so Cultivate Connection is of course our long form parenting class teaching about parenting from trauma or adversity or loss. We cover everything from how trauma affects the brain to all the different connecting practices that we can believe bring healing and hope within families, especially those who have experienced adversity, trauma, and loss. If you would like to become a Cultivate Connection facilitator, what that means is that you are being trained to teach the Cultivate Connection course in your community where you are with other families who are wanting to begin walking this journey as well. And so it's being an advocate, it's being a kind of a community gatherer, a leader. It also is the ultimate hit accountability for yourself because you're learning at a much deeper depth what it means to parent after trauma, to parent after adversity or loss. And it's just a very helpful, look, speaking from experience, it's a very helpful practice to be teaching the content. It holds you in greater check in your own home as well. So if you are wanting to look into that journey, you can check out the show notes. You can also head to empoweredtoconnect.org and find all of the information there. So for Becca, for Jesse, for everybody here at ETC, for Kyle Wright, who edits and engineers all of our audio, and for Tad Jewett, the creator of the music behind the Empowered to Connect podcast, I'm JD Wilson, and we'll see you next week on the Empowered to Connect podcast.